Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book, coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network Studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And I am so happy today I have in the studio with me Glenn Erickson, who is the author of The Earth Shrugged, Earth is Quarantined, and even starting a business, because Glenn was first a businessman, and now he is a writer, and I am so happy to welcome you to the studio, Glenn.
Thank you very much, Miss Patsy.
Okay, well, we're happy. You know, I'm whenever I have an author on whose books I really admire, it's just such a thrill for me, and I think you are really a great author.
I've
read three of your books now, and they're lots of fun. And I know that you're here today. You're going to talk a little bit about your books, but mostly we're going to talk about
the writing
really
process.
What the name of this program is, The Joy on Paper, The Fun of Writing. And so I'm also happy that I have on the telephone an author. It's hard for me to believe that it's his first book. Neil Litherland was on the program 2 years ago. And he was here because I invited him because he had a blog called The Literary Mercenary. And I was so impressed with his vision into writing and his joy on paper. Neil, are you there?
I am here, yes.
Well, it is so nice to have you back.
Well, it's a pleasure to be back.
Well, you know, as you recall, you were on the program 2 years ago, and we were talking about your ideas on book promotion and writing in general, and what I really admire is how much you have encouraged other writers. And now it is your first book, the new book?
It's my first novel, yes.
Your first novel. And it is really quite amazing. I was so taken with it. It's called Crier's Knife. And when I was reading it, I said to myself, oh my goodness, this novel is so wonderful. It is not easy to write fantasy. It's not easy to take a reader into a new world and get them really so comfortable, because especially fantasy and sci-fi, there are words and new words that you sort of have to learn along the way, and you just do it so seamlessly.
Well, thank you very much.
And, you know, I have in the studio with me, I have Glenn Erickson, and he's going to talk a little bit later about the joy of writing. And I know that, you know, tell us about this novel. How did you come out with the idea, and tell us a little bit about it?
All righty. Short version, I'm hoping this is the first in the series for anyone who picks it up and is wondering if there's more.
I hope so.
But that's the goal. But Crier's Knife is the first in what I'm referring to as a Western fantasy, in that it has lots of the same beats that we associate with classic pulp adventure, pulp Western. But at the same time, it's also very much a classic fantasy story, in that we have, you know, rugged protagonists going off into a world full of strange and magical things. For this particular story, we're introduced to Dirk Crier, who is our protagonist. And yeah, something has gone wrong. His cousin has gone missing, and yeah, he is tasked with going and finding where that troublesome boy got himself off to. And the difference, this is not the first time this has happened. If we're going with the archetype of, you know, the stoic hero and the smiling sidekick, of, you know, Teller is always getting himself into some sort of trouble, but this time he may have found something genuinely dangerous. So there's a ticking clock element, wondering whether or not Dirk will reach him in time, and if he doesn't, what's going to happen to the people who are responsible?
Well, you know, fantasy, as I said, is something that you have to be able to take the reader into a whole new world. And when you came out with this idea, tell us how about the characters, because I really think that you've done a marvelous job of creating characters that readers will care about.
Thank you very much. For the idea for this one, actually got started because I'd read a lot of fantasy, you know, from the time I was very wee. Fantasy was my go-to genre. And I started noticing, you know, lots of things about it, lots of tropes that I didn't exactly dislike, but I wanted to try writing a fantasy novel without them. Of, you know, what happens when you don't have knights? What happens when you don't have dragons? What happens when all of the things we sort of associate as, like, the touchstones, especially since Tolkien, what happens when you take those away? And what you get is something much more Robert E. Howard, I like to think, if I'm going to be vain a little bit. But it's got that very fresh world, but also very identifiable, even if there is no... There's no big fantasy map in the beginning, you know, like lots of us are used to. There's no learning which country has which language. But at the same time, you still get bits of culture from the different places we visit. For example, the first town we open near is Ox Crossing. And it has, even though we're only there for a chapter or so, it is very clearly like a town that used to be just a place people came to trade horses. And it's in that awkward stage of, we're not big enough to be a legitimate city yet, but we're bigger than we used to be. And in that very brief walkthrough, we get a sense of a rough-and-tumble place that hasn't quite grown up yet. And this is the sort of place that shaped our protagonist. This is the kind of place he grew up. So by seeing this town, we also get a sense that some of that is what rubbed off on him.
Well, I really like Dirk. I thought he's a marvelously drawn character.
Thank you.
So tell us about him.
I'm trying to do it without spoiling too much.
Yeah, don't spoil too much. Just a little bit. Because I just like the way the story went.
I can give folks a bit of where the inspiration for it came from. Years and years and years ago, I read some of the Sackett novels from Louis L'Amour, and it was while I was doing that now you're seeing the connection.
Yes.
But I noticed it had a very unique setup in that it was a series, but every book was about someone new. They were just different members of the same clan. And I had that realization of, like, when you have your typical Western hero, you know, you have your Tennessee Mountain Boy, they have the various skills that would make them ideal adventurers, you know, both in, like, the real historical time period, but also in, like, a fantasy time period. So I sort of took that basic idea and tried to Adams Family it up a bit. So we have that kind of idea of the not quite reclusive mountain clan, but there's something a little odd about them. You know, something a little dangerous, a little strange. And I think a lot of the tone is set when we meet Dirk's grandmother in Chapter 2. And Blaze Cryer is, like, without question, a witch. Just out and out, that is what we're looking at. House hung with bones, speaks in riddles, you know, like, does magic, witch. And, like, once we've established that, but we also established that, like, to Dirk, this is normal, is kind of why it's why I think he's interesting as a character, is the worldview we see from him. If we were in anybody else's shoes, so much of this book would be, like, bizarre or terrifying. But because this is what he knows, he can't understand why anyone else is weirded out by this.
Yeah, and you know, she, after all, she makes cookies, cinnamon and nutmeg cookies, so she can't be all bad, right?
It can't be. That's how you know you're in trouble. If Grandma doesn't feed you when you show up, you've done something wrong.
Well, that I thought that it's a great name. I thought it was just a perfect name. First, I love the name Dirk. I thought that was a great name. And then when we got to the grandmother, and I just like that name, Blaze. I thought, and it's memorable. And one of the things with particularly with a fantasy book or sci-fi book, you need names that you stay in your head as you're reading.
You definitely do.
And she, anybody who reads this book, I think they'll come away, if they don't remember anybody else's name, they'll remember Blaze.
Oh, yes. I'm hoping eventually to get more into, like, her very strange backstory and how she came to the mountain.
Oh, I'm sure you're going to come up with some fascinating, a fascinating backstory for her.
It's mostly just finding the story to work it out, but yeah, that's ends the illusion I made earlier. Is what I'm hoping to do with the series is each book will be a different story from a different member of the Cryer clan. So there'll be like change it. Well, not changes. There'll be crossovers, you know, occasionally, like, you know, a couple books down the line, we might get Dirk and a couple of his brothers together for something big. But mostly it's just going to be different people having different kind of adventures, but still in the same world, still with that same general understanding of who the family is and what they generally do.
Well, it's a big process when you are coming out with an idea for a series to actually set it out. Now, Glenn, are your books in a series or are they standalones?
Right now they're all standalones, but two of them were designed to be a trio, a series of at least three books, a trilogy. But I have had trouble getting some of the trilogy started, so I've left them alone for the time being. And they may just stay standalone.
but it's a wonderful thing is if you do come into a novel with that idea, because you are sort of leaving little chestnuts for us to pick up in the next book.
It was little hanger-ons in the story that, why didn't you finish the story about that one? Oh, then the next one comes out. Ah, there's where it came
from.
Well,
exactly. And you have so many.
That's where you get them.
Yeah, and you have so many just little side characters that when, you know, we finish, we say, oh, I'd like to know more about this person. I'd like to know. And that's great. You're started on the second book by now, I would think?
I have the second book partially sketched out, but I'm doing, because I know my brain and I know the way that I function, I'm going to be doing a very different project in the middle so that I don't get too tired of one world and just end up getting lazy with it.
Good.
But,
that's a good idea.
The book I'm currently sketching out is actually a continuation of a short story I had published in a collection earlier this year. It was From a Cat's View, which, you know, I found out about it, and I have several friends of mine who, you know, they had come to me and said, hey, we want to do what you do. I'm like, all right, let's sit down and do some short stories. But by the time that I had talked to them through their proposals, I had one of my own that was not the story either of them were telling. The short that I contributed was Stray Cat Strut. And it was a sort of gangland noir story with the very, very typical opener of, like, you know, beautiful dame shows up in my place, like, a friend of mine's calling in a favor, I have to go and, like, find her missing sister sort of setup. But everyone in the cast are stray animals in New York.
Ah, that sounds good.
our protagonist, Leo, is a Maine Coon that is an alley cat living behind a deli. You know, there's his quote-unquote client is, you know, an uptown cat whose sister ran away. The gang lord that he goes to get information from is a subway rat. And it got such a response, I was like, I suppose I could do something more with this. And so I'm sort of drawing out the mystery for that. My hope is I can get that done relatively quickly because I've got so much of that set up from the short. I've got everything established. I know where I'm going with it. And then once that's done, I'll get to work on Crier's Silence.
Well, tell everybody a little bit about your background, because as I said, I discovered you when I was looking for people who love books and wanted to help people promote books, and you had The Literary Mercenary, and which I found fascinating, and you had so many good ideas for authors. And I, even on your Amazon page, I love that you recommend other authors. So tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Alrighty. This particular stage of my career, I sat down one day and I had that decision of, like, I'd wanted to write off and on for years, ever since I was in high school, and I'd finished my degree and I had everything sort of set up, and I decided, okay, now is the point where we become an author. We're going to get this going. And so I decided I was going to write short stories, I was going to get in collections, I was going to establish my bona fides so that, you know, when I go to people and I say, hey, I'm an author, they can be like, oh, really, what have you done? And I could just throw lists of books at them. And then, yeah, my thought was once I got that going, I would start working on novels, which, fortunately, I'm finally getting some stuff out. But at the same time, I was learning a lot of those difficult lessons that, you know, that younger authors run into of stuff you didn't know to ask, things that, unless you have a mentor or you were part of a program somewhere, you just don't know about, like how to properly format stuff, who accept email, all those little finicky parts of the business So I started up The Literary Mercenary, which was, you know, my blog's entire goal is to present all the information you need as an author, both for writing tips, if that's where your troubles are, or business tips, if you're really good at the writing part, but you're not so good at the marketing promotion part.
Now, when you started The Literary Mercenary, now, one of the things, you know, I don't know, are you still on Patreon? It's Patreon, right?
I am, yes.
Yeah. Tell us about that, because I know that it's difficult for authors to make money, and I would love to tell people about your site and how they can you know be in contact with you through this Patreon.
The Literary Mercenary, for anyone who goes there, is like totally free. There's no charges, no membership, no none of that. It's all out there for anybody who wants to use it. But as a way to kind of, you know, help me make up some of my costs and keep the site going, I have a Patreon account, which for those who don't use it, is a website that essentially lets you just tip people, you know, as the way you would if you were a theater patron. You know, you would give them money so they could continue doing the thing they're doing rather than having to go and get a day job and spend all their effort doing things you don't care about.
Well, and I think it's a great idea because, you know, if anyone goes to look at your advice, which is really top notch, because this is a problem for so many authors, you know, people like, you know, you said you wanted to write and eventually people will sit down and write. And then from that point, once they write, they don't know what to do. They don't know simple things, and it is really difficult to find it. You search around, and you find out you're wasting, you know, so much time, and it depresses them. I've had authors. I had one lady who wrote a book like 4 years ago. She wrote it, and she thought she, you know, could find enough stuff to keep her going, and then she just sort of gave up. And she said it's all so confusing. And I love your blog. I think that you write so succinctly and clearly that anybody can understand it, and you know, I think you're doing a great service for people.
Well, thank you. It's that age old chart of step one, write book. Step two, ? Step three, money.
Exactly.
Filling in that middle part that is what I'm trying to help with.
Well, I think you are doing a great job, and one of the nice things, as I said, that you've encouraged so many authors, and you recommend authors that people should read.
I do, yes.
You know, it's a generous thing. Carolyn Hart, who is a mystery writer of America Grandmaster, one of the things she always does, and she has, you know, in her book, she always talks about different authors. She might have, you know, 10 authors that she'll mention in books. When I was reading her, when I started reading her, I discovered authors through reading her books. I read her books, and because she recommended them, I read them, and I thought, well, that's great. So I love when an author will recommend other authors.
It's a thing that I find is once you don't even have to be an author. If you just go around to you know, conventions and, you know, places to get, you know, places where you have people selling their books, you know, you'll meet other writers, you know, whether it's locally or from the region or whatever. And it had reached that point where it was like, I do several conventions a year, and I adore it. It's my vacation time. But, you know, I'll see, you know, like, the same faces, you know, like, 3-4 times a year, and there's always that, hey, how have you been? And the follow-up question after we make sure that each other's health is okay is always, so how many books are you selling? And the answers are never as much as we would like. So I had that moment where I was like, you know what, I'm going to get everybody I know together whose books I've looked at, who I feel confident recommending, and I'm going to tell everybody else about them. We're going to take the spotlight off me for a minute.
Well, and you then, know, yeah, and the thing is, for an indie author, it's not easy. You have to really go out there and sell yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the, you know, when I was reading your book, I said to myself, I don't know, I was thinking, I want more people to read it. I want people to read this fine writing, because it is really fine writing. Your prose is beautiful.
Thank you very much.
You have a way with words. In just a few words, you're able to describe a scene it's so clear in my mind. When I was reading, I said, "Oh, I see this house built on a ledge and tucked into a cave." And I could see these things. I could see the nutmeg and cinnamon cookies. Everything that you write, it was really so beautifully done.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Now, are you completely self-taught, or you went to school, or how did you become such a fine writer?
Well, let's see.
Just practice makes perfect?
Yeah, practice makes perfect, and read a lot of stuff it's age old recommendation, but it is very true. My parents, my mother in particular, got me hooked on comic books when I was very young, and then from comics we went to short stories, from short stories we went to novels, and once I discovered that novels were a thing that I could just carry around with me everywhere I went, it was a miracle if I would talk to anyone for years and years.
Well, me too. Comic books, that was my start. My mother started us on comic books, and it was just, still today, it was just, I can see myself sitting, you know, in her lap, and she's running her finger along the words as she's reading the comic book, and that's how I learned to read. I was reading at such a young age because of comic books.
No, they're engaging, especially when you got all the pretty colors and the sound effects. But as far as formal training goes, I do have a college degree. It is not in writing at all. But when you go to school and when you have to write papers, you have to. And I'd taken creative writing classes, of course, because anyone with my interest who had the opportunity is going to sign up for at least one of them. But just writing constantly, even if you're not writing stories, you get a sense of flow, you get a sense of, evocation's the wrong word, but you get a sense of what works and what doesn't.
Well, I have to take a commercial break, but will you hold on when I come back? Would you recommend a few other authors for us?
And I would be more than happy.
Okay, so we'll just take a quick break and we'll be right back. Hold on.
All righty.
Talk Radio Network.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660. Or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
With a Z. and I am back with my guest on the phone, Neil Litherland, and I have in the studio with me Glenn Erickson. And I just want to tell everyone that I really think that Neil's first book, which I predict is the first book in what is going to be a wonderful series, is called Crier's Knife. And Neil, I really think that this is going to be, at some point, you're going to start winning awards for this because the writing is so fine.
Well, I hope you're right.
There's a moment when I'm reading a book and I say, boy, this person has a way with words, and you do. And I'm so looking forward to the next books. I know that, so Crier's Knife is available on Amazon. And right now it's just Kindle?
No, it's Kindle and paperback.
Kindle and paperback. So Kindle and paperback. I think people order this book and do a nice review for Neil, because it really helps on Amazon if they get, you know, a number of reviews, right?
I've been told that if you get 50 reviews, you get a unicorn.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well,
so,
I
have not gotten that high yet, but we'll find out.
Well, you deserve a unicorn because you deserve to get noticed. And I really hope that people will read this book. I think I always admire an author who is able to capture a reader and take them into a new world, and you do that. So I have in a minute I'm going to be talking to Glenn, and he's going to be talking about this joy of paper, and I thought maybe you could just, besides recommending your own book, which you have to do because that's what authors have to do, are there two other authors that you would recommend people read?
There are, actually. Well, there's far more, but I can't.
Yeah, I'm sure.
There's one fellow. He and I have worked together on other projects, but Clinton Boomer is his name. He's an Illinois resident, and he has a modern fantasy book, The Hole Behind Midnight, which is top-notch stuff. You know, if you like weird, kind of dark, and you're very interested in seeing a new twist on a modern fantasy story, I think that will set someone very well for at least a week. After a week, you'll probably be done with it.
Okay.
And then for my second recommendation, for those who prefer, still same overall genre, but very, very different tone. Lauren Jankowski writes. I'm trying to remember the name of the series. I think it's the Shifter series is just the title.
Yes, it is.
But it's
currently
4 or 5 books out right now. I don't remember if she has 5 out or if she's working on 5. But, you know, more than enough to see somebody through if they're the sort of person who enjoys just burning through a series, you know, over a month or two.
Yeah, I've read the first two, and she's great. You're right. Great recommendation. Well, how can people contact you, find more out about you? What website do you like? Facebook?
I am making it very easy to find me. It's like is because people can't spell my last name. It's awful. If you go to neilflitherland.blogspot.com, or you can just search The Literary Mercenary, it'll take you to my blog. I have a contact form there. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Tumblr. I'm on Twitter. I'm on
You're doing it all.
All sorts of places.
Well,
you can even find me on LinkedIn if you really want to.
Okay, well, really, I think that people will be really happy to read your books because it's whenever there's good writing, it just makes you smile. So, Neil, I want to thank you so much for being on. I hope that
thank you very much for having me.
As soon as you have the next book, you let me know, and you'll be back here, and we'll talk more about this joy of writing that you certainly have discovered. And again,
I will be happy to come back.
Everybody, I think the easiest is search for Literary Mercenary. It's really easy to remember. And I love all of your blogs.
Thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye now, Neil. Great talking to you.
Bye.
Okay, bye.
Always a pleasure.
Bye, Neil.
Bye. Okay, well, he is a nice young man. As I said, I was so impressed with his work on his blogs, because when I was looking at, I had been doing this program for a year, and I was looking for people who were trying to give advice to authors, because I had discovered after I started the program, of course, I was talking to many best-selling authors, and then more and more I was talking also to local authors, and they would come to me with problems or with questions, and I didn't know, you know, not having myself written a book and having it published, I didn't know all the ins and outs. And I was really impressed when I hit upon The Literary Mercenary. I just discovered it one day, and I said, wow, this kid really understands the process and loves writing. And as he said, this is his first novel, and he wrote short stories. So that's a great way to hone your craft, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
I've got several small stories that never made it to press. They're in an anthology that I have yet to release because they probably will never see the light of day. But they were good ideas and good exercises.
Well, you know, let's talk a little bit about you. Your name is Glenn L. Erickson. I'm saying the L because there is another Glenn Erickson out there.
So I'm told.
So, yes. But it's interesting that he is a movie reviewer, not an author of like you, of sci-fi books, and you're having lots of fun. Tell us about how you are some of your books, and then about what is it that you want to get across to people? Because we've talked about it, that authors, up and coming authors, starting authors who are just starting or dreaming about writing, they don't know what to do. They don't know how to go about it.
That's a very good question. Mine started because I've read hundreds and hundreds of books in my life. Most of them were pretty good. Then there were some that I look at the, close the cover, and I look at the author, and I go, I know this author can do better than this. And I've actually thrown a couple of books away just because they were so bad. Then I thought about, well, I have stories I can tell. I'm at least better than some of these, and they're published. So I started writing during odd times. I'd be waiting in an airport or waiting for somebody else to get something done, and I'm twiddling my thumbs. So I started my first novel that way, and it took me years to get it done. But what I've discovered after writing so many books is writing a book is like a relationship. It's, you start out with this great idea. You're in love with the idea. You can't wait to get started. You're mapping it out. You're fleshing it out, and you're writing away like crazy. Then life intrudes, and you have to go to bed, or you have to eat, or you have to answer a phone call, or life gets in the way. And you can't wait to get back to the story. Then, after you've been at it for a while, you're going, oh my God, I got to go back to the story again. I can't leave it unfinished. I've got so much more to do. There are days that I have that the words just flow. I can write and write and write. I don't know if it's any good at the time, but I'm writing, and I'm loving what I'm doing. Then there are other days I'll turn on the computer, I'll open up the word processor, and I'm looking at a blank page, and I just can't put a sentence together. I can't make sense of anything. I delay by going and getting another cup of coffee or something. And I finally struggle through putting something together, but that usually ends up just getting deleted. But I did it. I wrote something. I'll reread it, and maybe something of it is useful. It's a kernel of something else. But I have learned also that you can't write one story continuously, at least I can't. I can't write one story continuously. You just sit down, write it, get up, go to bed, come back the next day after breakfast and continue writing. That gets old after a while. I have to put it aside and I'll go and edit a previous book. I'll read somebody else's book. I'll put it aside for up to 6 months so that I get a fresh perspective. Then I'll start back reading at the beginning of the story again, and having read other books or read other genre, written other books, reviewed or edited other things, I get a different perspective. I'm attending a book club, Pinellas Writers Club. I'll read bits and pieces to them, and I get feedback from them. I listen to their stories, and I get better ideas. I even use an online editing tool that helps me point out the worst of my offenses. Then I get the story to the point where I think I'm ready to publish it. And I'll read it again, but I'll put it aside. After I'll put it aside, then I'll read it again. And each time my knowledge has grown, and I'll find further things to change. It's the old engineering term that eventually you have to shoot the engineer to get the product out the door. because he'll never be done with it. And I've got three books right now that I'm working on that I could probably publish, but I keep rereading them and I keep finding new things to change, making them tighter as I'm learning more things. Because as a writer, you never finish learning. You'll always find something to change. Conversely, there are also those things in a story that you'll have written that you'll come to it and you'll read it and you know that you wrote it because it's your book, your story. But it's not, it's wonderful. It's something that you're in awe of and you don't remember writing it. It was like somebody else took over and wrote the story at that point.
That's what I call that absolute magic moment where you're looking at it and you're saying, I can't believe I wrote it. I just can't believe it.
I dare not touch it. I don't even want to edit one word of that. I keep that chapter highlighted and set aside. Don't touch it. It works. Now, I can just get the rest of the story to be as magical. But it's the whole idea is there are going to be ups and downs. You're going to love it some days. You're going to hate it some days. You're going to want to delete it some days. Then you're also going to get a story that you'll be writing, and all of a sudden it'll take a left turn. I was writing a story, I haven't published it yet, about a sentient ship, and all of a sudden the story took an entirely left-hand or right-hand turn, and I'm going, where is this going? So I stopped, saved that copy off. I might make that the director's cut someday in the future. Backed up a couple of chapters, chopped out the character that caused the diversion, and then moved the story forward again. I got a little farther. Then I ran into something that I don't know how to describe. I got tired of writing the book. I wanted to end it. I couldn't find a way to end the book. Well, I finally came up with a way to do it. Is I summarized the end of the story without going into the too much detail and ended the story. And unfortunately, it ended on a sad note, and I didn't want that. So I'm rereading it now and editing it to see if I can flesh out that abrupted area at the end and make it a better novel, or I may read it and realize that that's actually the best way for that particular story to end. It's interesting. Sometimes I don't know where my story is going to go because the characters are living in my mind and they contribute to the process. They'll say something, they'll do something, they'll interact or react to something, and the story takes on an entirely different perspective.
It's like sometimes the characters become so real to you. They could be like sitting around your dining room table, and then you go off to bed, and you're leaving them sitting there, and they're like, "Okay, come back here. We have more to do. We want to keep you going here."
Or they look at you and go, "Really? You have me saying that or doing that? Come on, that's not me."
Isn't that? It is such a wonderful, that's why I call this paper Joy on Paper, because really what happens is when you have that joy on paper and the words come out and they're just perfect, that's when that's what happened when I was reading Neil Litherland's book. There were sentences in there and I just sort of, just for a moment, I like took a deep breath and I said, oh, wow, how did he do that? How did he manage in really a few words, you know, a sentence, two sentences? And when you're doing a fantasy, you really are taking a person into a different world, so they really have to imagine it. And I'm thinking, wow, I'm here. I was like, sort of, I felt like twirling around at one point. He was describing a certain place, and I felt like I was there just twirling around and just the joy of being in a place and how the author, and it must have been fun for him when he wrote it. He might have rewritten that. You know, this is what people don't understand. Sometimes it comes straight out, and then sometimes you just have to work on it to fine-tune it, to hone it, to get the exact word, and it's a wonderful feeling.
It is. It is a wonderful feeling when it comes out right. And then there's the time that you brutally excise a sentence that had just been plaguing you. You can't get it right. Just take it out and start
over.
It's
gone.
It's just, you can't paint rust is what it comes down to. You finally have to remove the bad metal, put fresh metal in place, and get the story moving forward.
That's a good thing. I'm going to use that line. You can't paint rust. That's good.
So I had a thought for a minute there, and I've totally lost it.
Oh, that's all right. You can just chat about anything here. We're talking about editing. Editing is difficult.
Yes. For me, I'll start out with a serious intent of reading each sentence and analyzing it. Is that the best way to say the word? That gets tiresome. And then I end up just reading the story and enjoying it as the way I wrote it. Ah, I remember what I wanted to say. That brought it up. When I write a story, I'm visualizing the story, because people don't memorize words. They memorize pictures, events that happen to them, smells, the senses. I try in writing, and most of the good authors try in their writing to evoke the feelings, the visualizations, the sensations they had while writing the story. They're either looking at something and describing it, or they're imagining something and describing it. You're hoping that whoever is reading the story will visualize something close to what you are describing, and then they will use their life experience to flesh out the picture. They'll add the colors if you don't have the color in there. They'll add the smells. If you allude to a smell, they'll pick one and add to the story.
Yeah, well, like I mentioned Neil's character in there. Her name is Blaze Cryer, the grandmother. And it's a simple little thing of her serving nutmeg and cinnamon cookies, but it sets the tone for the whole character.
I picture her in flame red hair, freckled face, wearing some kind of a frock that, you know, that women back in the 1800s would wear while cooking, with a big white apron, flowery hands, and a spot of flour on her nose where she keeps rubbing at her nose with her floured hands.
You see what Neil has done with a few words, and that's a wonderful thing.
That's it. I figure Blaze isn't her real name, it's her nickname, but she's adopted it. That's what I strive for in my stories, is that when I reread my stories, I try and picture or see if the picture is still there, and if something is lacking, I'll flesh it out. And then I absolutely prize feedback from people that have read the stories, saying, why did you do this? Why is this particular thing happening? My mom read one of my stories, and she put a post-it note in the manuscript, says, where's the baby? And I got a feedback from another guy, says, why was the son unstable? And loving feedback like that, the whole idea is, when I hand somebody a story, he says, don't edit the book. I said, don't care about syntax. If I misspelled it, left a period out, leave the English teacher out of it. Did you enjoy the story? Did you see what I saw when I wrote the story? And when I describe Lake Tahoe, are you standing on the bluffs looking over this deep, beautiful blue lake on a warm summer day or warm spring day? If I'm describing the inside of a spaceship, can you feel the metallic smell of the air and the chill? Somebody's hunting. Can you hear the snap of the leaves under my feet? I'm putting the best stories I have ever read, regardless of genre. I don't care what genre. If I lose myself in the story, to where my eyes are reading the book, my mind is translating it into a mental movie, to where I am no longer reading the book. My eyes are doing the job. They're reading the story, and they're feeding the image to my brain. And my brain is creating the story, and I literally lose myself in the story. I'm not even conscious of changing the page. I'm just watching the story unfold. When I can get a book like that, that is good writing to me. I don't care what the genre is, who the author is. If an author can capture that essence, that is good writing.
Well, that is so well put, and that is exactly what said, you know, you've written now quite a few books, and
yes,
you're getting better. You feel, and I can see too, that you're getting better all the time.
Yes, I feel like I'm getting better all the time. My book club doesn't always agree, but
that's part of the fun of being in a book club. It helps, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. If you're interested in becoming an author, find a local writers club. There are many different flavors of them. Some of them are more towards romance, some are toward murder mystery, some are towards poetry. Find one that is biased toward what you want to write, and just go join the club. It usually doesn't cost much of anything. And just listen for a while. Listen to other people write and get some ideas as to what they're struggling with. Then use what you've learned to enhance anything that you have written or begin writing something. If you have a story in your mind, you want to become a writer, you have a story that you want to tell. I don't care what the story is. It's a story that you feel that you want to tell. The process is write down whatever you can think of about the story, like an outline, a synopsis, whatever, of the story. Just put, you know, words on paper. That's the idea of the paper, of what you want to write. Then pick an individual area and start working on it. Flesh it out a little bit. Where was it taking place? When was it taking place? What kind of characters are in there? What time of life is it? Is it the person old? Is the person young? Is it in the Old West? Is it in a science fiction area? Is it wherever? And you try and picture and live the story in your mind. And as ideas come to you, just put them down. You don't have to be in any kind of order. You don't have to be syntactically correct. You know, let the English teacher wring their hands. Get it down. Get it written. Then here's the beginning of writing. Read the story aloud to yourself.
Oh, yes. This is so important.
If you can read the story without stumbling, then you're close to having a good story. Keep editing until you can read the story out loud without fumbling over your words. Then, once you think you have the story as complete as possible, read it or part of it to somebody else. If they are interested, let them read the story and tell them, I'm not interested in getting your corrections for grammar. What questions do you have? Did I leave something out? Did I go too far in another area? Do you have questions? Take their feedback and make the story better. And keep doing that. It's a never-ending story. And with electronic publishing nowadays, even if you publish the story, you can always go back and change it and reissue it later.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in today, Glenn, and for supporting Joy on Paper. And
you're just
so wonderful. Because, as you know, my goal here is, I love to talk to best-selling authors. But it is one of the fun things is to discover authors at the beginning of their career. It's so exciting. As I said, I found Neil Litherland, mm-hmm. Nikki Drayden, so many authors that I've started with right from the beginning, from their short stories. And now, after having the program for 3 years, they're writing their first novel. And it is so exciting to see this development. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate your input, and I hope you'll come back. I want to talk, next time you come on, I want to talk about the process of editing with professional editors and getting out there. I'm going to have, as a matter of fact, a professional editor coming on the program, and people will learn a lot from her and about what goes behind really top-notch professional editing. As I mentioned to you, if you have a cupcake bakery, you have to make certain investments.
Yes.
And in order to get ahead, even somebody like Hugh Howey, you know, he wrote Wool, and he still had it edited and wanted it to be really perfect. And of course, then he becomes a bookseller, and of course, multi-million dollars with it. So it's a process, and there's so much to learn. And I hope people will go to Neil Litherland's site. It's called Literary Mercenary. He has a lot of very, very intelligent and very, very important insights into writing, and I appreciate everything you said today. I hope that people will be encouraged, right?
Absolutely.
How do you do it? You have to start.
Just do it.
You just do it. You have to do it.
Keep doing it.
And you learn a lot.
It's like any skill in life. You have to keep at it.
Now, your books are available on Smashwords.
On Smashwords or Barnes & Noble.
Or Barnes & Noble. Smashwords and Barnes & Noble. And would you want to mention a few titles again?
Okay, I have a couple of them. My first novel was called The Founding of Planet Haven. I absolutely love that one. And then another one, that, if you ever see the picture, it's my hands on the cover, is The Time Hostage. It's a time travel book.
I love time travel.
And then I've got a couple of that are more practical. One was called Starting a Business, because I have started several businesses, and they're now, some of them are successful. And then I also had one that was caused by my son commenting that he'd love to win the lottery so he didn't have to work for a living. So I wrote a book called The Lottery Winner's Handbook. It's not how to win the lottery. It's how to endure winning the lottery. Believe me, it's not fun. And then some others that were after there. My shortest one's just 10 pages. It's called Practical Integrity. And I've got, that's a free one, and it's been given away over 1,000 times. Oh. So I love that little book. It's a picture of Lincoln on the cover.
Oh, that's great. Okay. Well, again, I want to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you.
And I hope that everyone go to my website. I'm going to have a page up for Glenn. It'll have links to his books, and also we'll have this interview so that people can listen to it again and be inspired by you, because it is important that we inspire people. And I wanted to thank very much Joe Callahan for dropping by. Love Poems for Dodie. Valentine's Day is 2 months away. You still have time to write your love story, a memoir. It doesn't have to be long. It can be 30 pages, 40 pages. Joe's here is 100 pages, and it's a story of his love for Dodie, and he mixed in poems, but also just stories about her. And you can self-publish a book like this on Amazon. Mm-hmm. It's wonder or Smashwords, and it's wonderful. That is a Valentine's Day gift.
That would be a wonderful gift.
That would be a wonderful gift for the person in your life who you love. And think about it, because it's not difficult. It's a matter of just sitting down and putting together your stories. And, you put your heart into it. And, wow, is that a gift?
It will be. People will, even if the syntax isn't good, the English isn't good.
It doesn't matter.
They'll see your heart.
They'll see it. And it's for your entire family, for forever. You put that book out there on Amazon, it's there forever. Think of that. 100 years from now, somebody might pick up, who is Dodie, and read this story.
Yes.
And be touched that there's such a thing as true love. Okay, well, I want to, again, remind everyone that one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, or to hear them spoken in an audible book, or maybe one day, if you're really lucky, to hear those words, lights, camera, action, and your book is being made into a film or a mini series like Carol J. Perry's is going to be someday.
Yay, Carol.
Yes, I know it's going to happen to her, because her Witch City Mysteries are fantastic, and I want to see them on Hallmark. I really do. And, of course, say something nice to somebody today, and I'm going to say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed.
Thank you, Ed.
And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, because he's a general around here. Okay, bye-bye now.